if this is helpless to please Krishna even, you feel yourself not qualified, etc. So become a responsible devotee. And if you really want to become feel helpless, become a manager.
How much to what degree knowledge without deep realization or some higher taste can help?
To what degree can knowledge without a higher taste and deep realization? But if we see the, it's so wonderful because the process of getting knowledge, which is hearing, if we hear from the right person and our consciousness is right, then naturally our realization and taste actually increases. This is Vidura says this to either Maitreya or Uddhava. He says that I can tell by the effect that your words are having in my heart, that what an exalted devotee you are, because there should be some effect. If our consciousness is right and the speaker's consciousness is right, then that the process of hearing will touch our heart. And it's like water on the desert. It's satisfying, making us want to hear more and more and more. So that's a good sign when our eagerness to hear is increasing. That's a very good sign.
And when the conscious is not good of the ear, so he cannot get much of the knowledge. Although it's very intellectual or whatever, he can get all the knowledge.
Yeah. It's not a process of armchair speculation or dry knowledge. It's when we say devotees aren't interested in knowledge, we don't mean this kind of knowledge. We don't mean this. This knowledge about Krishna is Krishna. It is Krishna. The Srimad Bhagavatam, Puranarko Dunoditaha, it is risen like the sun, and to dispel the darkness of Kali Yuga, it is Krishna. The Bhagavad Gita is emanating from Krishna's mouth. It is Krishna. So this knowledge is Krishna. So it is not dry, and it shouldn't be approached intellectually. It should be approached submissively and to apply it. Is that?
Yeah, because my main point was with people who are not really surrendering and.
So the best example is the non-devotees who hear Bhagavad Gita. So many of them study Bhagavad Gita and get nothing. And they don't become devotees. But you can't do that and study Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. It will force you to be a devotee if you study it. Devotee means devotional service. So it will increase your devotion. And from my experience, I could read so much improperly, but if I concentrate my mind a little bit, and just read something and try to deeply understand it, it will affect or have deep effect, or some effect anyway. And I don't think the problem is that the devotees are trying to understand things too theoretically or intellectually. The problem is more on the other side, that we don't read and study enough. So we should be encouraged to read Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada said, my only criticism of the devotees is they think my books are for distribution, not for studying. I heard him say that. So we should study his books. They are knowledge, transcendental knowledge. Okay, thank you very much. Jai Srila Prabhupada. Jana Jana Salakaya Chaksu Samilitam Jaina Tasmai Sri Gurave Nama. Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kalamayam Tadati Swapandantikam. Krishna, 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 Krishna. The section of the Bhagavad Gita in the third chapter that we read yesterday is summarized in text 16 of the third chapter, which says, Krishna says to Arjuna, "My dear Arjuna, one who does not follow in human life the cycle of sacrifice thus established by the Vedas certainly leads a life full of sin. Living only for the satisfaction of the senses, such a person lives in vain." So we heard how the principle of the activity of the soul is a principle that is true for every embodied being. That every, because the soul is active, every creature, be he a human being, a demigod, or a simple worm, or mouse, or ant, they're always active because it is the nature of the soul. So and not only is he active, the soul active, but within the body, that soul is attempting his happiness, attempting to find happiness. That is the endeavor that he is undergoing, seeking happiness. But because he is within a material body, within a material consciousness, his happiness, his searches for happiness are always selfish. And they are based on sense gratification, combining the senses, the eyes, the nose, the taste, tongue, etc., which is the biggest of all the senses. The tongue, I don't know how big your tongue is, but it's the skin, actually, the sense of touch. Because it covers the entire body, and the tongue is, you know, no matter how long it is not that long. So the attempt for happiness of the conditioned soul, because he's active, he has to do something for happiness. So it is forced into selfish activities. Human life begins when he adopts the authority of the Vedas to get his selfish desires fulfilled, his sense gratification fulfilled. And he doesn't just whimsically act for his sense gratification, but using the Vedic system, accepting the authority of the Vedas, he accepts that there are those superior to me, and if they are pleased, then I will become happy. So this first principle, which elevates a soul who engages in the Vedic system, is he accepts that someone is superior to him and he has to please someone. Contemporary materialists do not think they have to please anyone. And they do not think that anyone is more superior to them. And they do not think that anyone is more important than them or an authority. This is the definition of modern materialistic society. There is no authority. No one is important. Every man is his own authority. This is what we are practically taught in schools from childhood and through the media. So it is a poison that will take that tendency that we have for activity and desire for sense gratification. That mood will degrade us into the lowest, most abominable activities. But if we follow the Vedic system through sense gratification, and even though we're tempting sense gratification, we'll gradually become elevated. And elevated means detached from sense gratification. Elevated means the mode of passion that we are full of material desires, they will diminish and will become peaceful. This is elevated consciousness and is measured in the mode of goodness, by the amount of goodness that one has. Good qualities, compassion, cleanliness, truthfulness, mercifulness. Not by simply how powerful one is and how one can exploit others and one can trick and steal, etc. That is not the measure of one's advancement. So Krishna therefore says in this verse, if one does not follow A human being who does not follow the system of sacrifice established by the Vedas, he will surely attempt to gratify his senses in a sinful way, and therefore he will become degraded. And living for the satisfaction of the senses only, such a person will live in vain. That means the great gift of human life, which is superior intelligence. Animals have intelligence, but it is of a very small, meager kind. And there is no question of having spiritual intelligence. But a human being has the gift of intelligence that allows him to take up spiritual life and progress spiritually. And a human being who does not use his human life in that way is considered no more than an animal, because it is like the very thing that is most valuable to him he has not used. So therefore his human life is considered to have been in vain. So that really summarizes what Krishna wants to tell Arjuna. That even one who has material desires will perform his prescribed duties. This is the Vedic system of elevation. Then Krishna says in text 17, Yastvat maratire vasyad atma chiptas chamanava atmanyeva chasantushtas tasya karyam navidyate. That in contrast to one who has material desires and is performing the Vedic sacrifices to gain selfish material satisfaction, there is a different kind of person. One who is Atmarati. Yastvatmarati eva syad. Atmarati means a person who is not taking his pleasure in selfish sense gratification, trying to eat and taste and touch and smell beautiful things, selfishly accumulating money. No, he's not in that mood at all. But yes, Atmariti eva syad. This Atmariti, he takes pleasure in himself on the spiritual platform. He has no material desires. So therefore, the translation says, one who takes pleasure in the self, whose human life is one of self-realization, who is satisfied in the self only, fully satiated, for him there is no duty. That means that those Vedic sacrifices that are performed by people who desire material opulence and material pleasures, this person, he has no reason to perform those. Just like a person who has $1 billion, he has no reason to go to the office and work for $2.50 an hour. Why does he bother doing that? He doesn't have any reason to do it, because he has a higher wealth. No need to engage in petty, the pursuit of petty, small sense pleasures. So this Atmariti, he takes pleasure in the self, and he has no motivation to get material things, and therefore he doesn't have to perform these Vedic sacrifices. But yet, he will do them nonetheless. Why? This is explained. A self-realized man has no purpose to fulfill in the discharge of his prescribed duties. He has nothing to get. He's already self-realized. He's reached that platform where he's no longer acting as the body. He's no longer thinking I'm the body and trying just to get selfish sense pleasure. So one would think he has no reason to act, and therefore he won't act in the Vedic system. But because he has no purpose to fulfill in this discharge of his prescribed duties, nor has he any reason not to perform such work, he is transcendental, nor has he any need to depend on any other living being for his happiness, such as the demigods. He doesn't need to please anyone. He is beyond that stage where he has to think someone, at least I'm not the supreme. He doesn't need that. He's self-satisfied. But yet, we have to know, does such a person work? Who is that for?
what's next? They're going to film the kirtan tonight, Belgium TV, so everyone should be there. And everyone has to smile and dance. Okay? So the question is, does such a person who doesn't need to work in the Vedic system, does he work? Does he do his prescribed duties? And the answer is in text 19. Tasmada shakta satatam karjam kama samachara ashakto yacharan karma paramapnoti parusha. So tasmad ashakta. Ashakta means what? Without attachment. So without attachment, constantly, karjam karma samachara. Karjam karma samanchara, that he performs his duty always, but without attachment. The person who is has his material selfish desires, he performs his duty to get the fruit of the work so he can enjoy. But this type of person has no desire to enjoy on the material platform, but yet he works. Why? Ashakto yacharan karma. He works without attachment. He acts paramapnoti purusha, because by working in that way, one will attain the supreme. He will go. He will make spiritual advancement. And this principle is one of the important principles of Krishna consciousness, and it will be developed that by working, ultimately working for Krishna, but working without material attachment, dutifully, from within the heart, knowledge arises, because this work is in goodness. And sattvam samjayate gyanam. I always say this verse 200 times when I'm speaking on the Bhagavad Gita. From the mode of goodness, from sattva, sattvagun, arises gyan or knowledge. So when one works without attachment to the fruit of one's work, one gets knowledge. So he does actually want something. He wants more and more transcendental realization to become elevated in consciousness. And therefore he still works. Now Krishna, and there's going to be more on this, but here's the basic principle. That even if one doesn't have material desires, one should still work. And Krishna is going to quote some very interesting examples. Kings such as Janaka attained perfection solely by performing their prescribed duties. Therefore, just for the sake of educating the people in general, you should perform your work. Janaka Maharaj was a king, but yet he was the most exalted of devotees. There's one story how he used to love to hear the Bhagavatam. And a Bhagavatam reciter, a great learned Brahmin, came to his kingdom. And there were many Brahmins living there. So all the Brahmins came to hear the Bhagavatam. And the king came day after day. And the Bhagavatam speaker, he spoke very sweetly. And the king was very pleased and all the Brahmins were pleased. And then one day, something happened in the kingdom. And at the time for the Bhagavatam class, the Brahmins assembled and the speaker assembled. But King Janaka wasn't there. So the Bhagavatam reciter, he was waiting for the king to come before he would start. And all the Brahmanas were laughing inside and they were thinking, oh, this speaker of the Bhagavatam, he's waiting for the king because he's attached to the money that the king is going to give him. And he's making him the prime hearer. So he's not willing to start until the king is there. He's giving him so much respect because he's the one who is has the big treasury. So they were thinking like that. And then the king came. And he began the speaking of the Bhagavatam. And all of a sudden, a messenger came rushing in, and he went over to the king
And he whispered to the king in the middle of the Bhagavatam, he whispered to him, there's a great fire in the kingdom. And it's getting close to your treasury house. And it was the middle of the Bhagavatam recital. So what to do? He's the king, he's a responsible man, all his treasury is about to burn up. But he was so intent on the Bhagavatam recital that he quickly gave some instructions, do this. And then he sent everyone away and he went to listen again. And then the messenger came back and said that the Brahmin quarters were about to burn. And all the Brahmins went running out to save their camel. So then, when they came back, the Brahmins could understand, actually the king was in an exalted position. And that is why the speaker of the Bhagavatam was waiting for him to come before beginning. It wasn't for any other reason. And the king, and this will be explained or reviewed and said again in the 18th chapter, Yatta Pravita Bhutanam Yena Savamidam Pratam, that by doing one's prescribed duty in the right consciousness, one can gain perfection. And that right consciousness, on what's being spoken of here, is detached from the fruits of one's work and acting dutifully. But higher than that is when one is working as a service for Krishna and giving Krishna the fruit. That means one is materially detached, which is what's being spoken of here. Becoming materially detached, but better or more complete, or the purpose of becoming materially detached is becoming spiritually attached. And actually speaking, this verse, if you have desire to merge in with Brahman, or if you have desire to love Krishna, it is applicable to both, that one has to work without material detachment. But for the devotees, they know that half of the statement is written, that without material detachment, but with deep, deep spiritual attachment. And then our Krishna consciousness becomes perfect. Without that spiritual attachment, we will not actually make great progress in spiritual life. We have to get that. Why? Because the senses will always be pushing. Try to be detached. Narottama Das Thakur says in one of his songs that you tell the mind not to hear and it will to do something will tend to do the opposite. Tell the mind to stay awake, it will tend to go to sleep. Tell the mind to go to sleep, it will tend to stay awake. This is the nature of the mind. It is obstinate, very hard to control. So unless it is controlled by attachment, the positive, it is very hard to give up on the negative or the things to become detached from matter. So by working without material attachment, one will attain the supreme. But we should work with spiritual attachment. So Prabhupada explains that point in the purport. The Supreme is the personality of Godhead. A person therefore acting for Krishna or in Krishna consciousness under the proper guidance without attachment to the result of work is certainly making progress towards the supreme goal of life. In Krishna consciousness, not just detached, but in Krishna consciousness. Krishna bhakti rasa matir. This is the definition of Krishna consciousness. So Janaka Maharaj worked, acted dutifully, although he had no attachment, just to set the example for others. Because in text 21, a most famous verse, Yadya Ratsharati Shrestas Tattari Vetaro Jana Sayat Pramanam Kurute Lokas Taranavartate. That means that whatever the Shrestha, the leader, the respectable person does, whatever example he sets, that pramanam, that proof, that example, that will be followed by everyone. Lokastada navartate. That everyone will follow in his footsteps. So this is the principle that Janaka Maharaj is exhibiting. By acting properly, everyone will follow in his footsteps. I remember when I was growing up in high school, when the President of the United States was John Kennedy, and he was very popular, and he didn't wear a hat. And because of that, the entire hat industry in the United States was ruined. Because of that. Because whatever action a great man performs, common men will follow. And then Krishna gives even a more astounding example than Maharaj Janaka. And he says, not only did Janaka work just to set an example, he didn't want anything. He didn't have anything to attain, but he was working to set an example. But not only that, Krishna says, O son of Prita, there is no work prescribed for me. Krishna speaking, within the three planetary systems, nor am I in want of anything, nor have I have any need to obtain anything. Yet, I am engaged in prescribed duties. After all, Krishna is the supreme controller. Ishvara sarva bhutanam bhoktaram jagatapasam sarva loka maheshwaram. He is the controller of everything. He owns everything. He is Bhagawan. He possesses all opulence. So what does he need to work for? Everything belongs to him. But yet he says, still I'm engaged in performing my prescribed duties. Because he's telling Arjuna, he wants Arjuna to perform his prescribed duties. If you have material desires, Arjuna, you should perform your prescribed duty of being a warrior and fight. And if you have no material desires, Arjuna, you should perform your prescribed duty as a warrior and fight. Krishna is intent on making Arjuna fight in this battlefield. And Krishna continues his explanation. For if I ever failed to engage in carefully performing prescribed duties, O Partha, certainly all men would follow my path and they would stop work. And what would be the result of that? If I did not perform prescribed duties, text 24, all these worlds would be put to ruination. I would be the cause of creating unwanted population, and I would therefore destroy the peace of all living beings. So that this is a very interesting point, how in the first chapter Arjuna said, O Krishna, if I fight in this battle, the families are going to be ruined. And if the families are ruined, the women will not be protected. And my fighting will cause the degradation of womanhood. And therefore, vanasankara, unwanted children, will be produced if I fight. And here Krishna is saying exactly the opposite. If you don't fight and don't do your prescribed duty, therefore you are going to be the cause of creating unwanted population. And the whole world will be put into ruination. So Arjuna's argument is completely turned around by Krishna. And Krishna says here, that vanasankara, or unwanted, untrained population, they will destroy the peace of all living beings. And we see that is exactly the population of the world today. And they are truly destroying the peace of all living beings. It is a fact. But not doing the duties, not acting properly, not setting the right example is the cause of that. Text 25. Krishna is going to speak the philosophy and the difference between the two ways of performing one's duties. As the ignorant perform their duties with attachment to resolve. Why is it ignorance to perform one's duty with attachment to the result? In other words, doing one's work to get the material profit for the sake of enjoyment. Why is it specifically ignorance? Huh? Right? Forgetting who's the proprietor. But what is knowledge? Ignorance is the opposite of knowledge. So when you think you're the proprietor, you're thinking that you're the body. That is ignorance. And knowledge specifically means that I am a soul. So it is ignorant of the fact that we're a soul.
So as the ignorant perform their duties with the attachment to the results, to get the fruit of the work for enjoyment, the learned may similarly act, but without attachment, for the sake of leading people on the right path, setting the right example. Text 26, this explains, how should those who have knowledge, who know they're not their body, and ultimately who know they are Krishna's servant, how should they act towards those who are working but who are ignorant and who are attached to the fruit of the work? This is an important point because it very much teaches that those who are advanced in knowledge, it instructs them how they should deal with those who aren't advanced in knowledge, and those who are attached, who are working but are materialists and attached to the fruit of their work. This verse instructs what we should do. Na buddhi bedam janayet agyanam kama sanginam joshayet savakamani vidvan yukta samacharan. So as not to disrupt the minds of ignorant men attached to the fruit of result of prescribed duties, a learned person should not induce them to stop work. This principle is very important. Never preach in such a way that the person is inclined to give up work. If we preach that working materialistically is useless because you're going to die and this happens and this problem happens and that problem happens and it's temporary, we should make sure that the people we are preached to are going to adopt Krishna conscious work if we're going to preach in that way. But that is not exactly how Krishna tells Arjuna that the preaching should be done, to tell them to give up what they are doing. Rather, Krishna says, by working, by he himself's own work, the one who has knowledge, who works in the spirit of devotion, he should engage them, those who are in ignorance, in all sorts of activities for the gradual development of Krishna consciousness. In other words, the business, so much the business of those who live in the temples and who are preaching to those who are outside in the congregation or in the community who are working, is to teach them how to use their work in such a way that they will gradually develop Krishna consciousness. And it is not, the preaching and the teaching is not to teach them that their work is useless and it's nonsense. Rather, it's how to engage their work, them and their work, teach them how to engage their work in such a way that Krishna is pleased by their work. And this is also explained by Narada Muni to Srila Vyasadeva in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, when he explains, does not a thing therapeutically treated, a thing that causes the disease, say if one gets sick by drinking too much milk, the cure is the same cause of the sickness, but therapeutically treated. In other words, yogurt or dahi. If you take milk which causes the disease and turn it into yogurt, it will cure the disease of the stomach. So similarly, the work, when our mood is fruitive, I want this, I want that, selfish, selfish, selfish. When that work becomes turned towards Krishna, that same work is used in Krishna's service, either the money that comes from the work, or the skills that come from the work, or this or that, somehow or another, the devotee's duty is to train those who are working in the outside world, the so-called outside world, how they can use their work in Krishna's service and not disrupt their minds and make them feel that they are outsiders, that they are not devotees, etc. So many things that were karmis, or dirty commies, or whatever. Before, it doesn't really happen so much nowadays, but in the early days of the movement, we talk about the commies. The commies are like this, and the commies are like that. And even though no one would say dirty commies, dirty, rotten, lousy, horrible
commies. It was sort of in parentheses before it understood. And that was the whole mood. And if you, and life was simple in those days. If you lived in the temple, you were a devotee. And if you didn't live in the temple, you were a demon. It was really very, very, very simple, black and white. And there was no congregation or anything, or even concept like that. So it was just the devotees and the dirty commies. And then, ISKCON has matured so much from those days. And now we're learning how to deal with the congregation and not think of them, and to see them as innocent. And this will be described in the 15th chapter, that if someone is innocent, Mrityum Shruti Parayana, if they have a tendency to hear, they will also transcend by the process of hearing. And this is very much the different steps on the process. They have attachment, so teach them how to use their work in Krishna's service. Even if we ourselves have no attachment to the fruit of the work, we should not be unsatisfied with people if they are not on that level, but rather we should teach them how to work in devotion and therefore advance. Prabhupada explains in his purport, there's a few sentences that I'll just read. Therefore, a realized soul in Krishna consciousness should not disturb others in their activities or understanding, but he should act by showing how the results of all work can be dedicated to the service of Krishna. The learned Krishna conscious person may act in such a way that the ignorant persons working for sense gratification may learn how to act and how to behave. This is the great weight of being a devotee, is that whatever we teach has to be taught by example. This is the weight of being a teacher, and the devotees are meant to be teachers in society. And Prabhupada said about the Gurukula teachers that example is better than precept. Or in English, the expression is, actions speak louder than words. I remember when I was teaching in Gurukula many years ago, I was dealing with 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds and 7-year-olds, and it was somewhat difficult for me. And I was teaching them to read. And I remember it was very frustrating for me. I'd be teaching a child how to read, and if they didn't get the words right, when I thought they should have gotten the words right, I'd say, "Read, read!" And then I figured out a system to save myself a lot of anxiety. I taught the children how to teach each other how to read, and I would just check it and supervise, and it actually worked really well. But what I saw was some of the children who I taught how to read, when the children who they were teaching how to read weren't reading satisfactorily, they'd go, "Read, read!" And I tell them, "You should be very patient, you know, when they can't read. Don't worry, you should be very patient and tolerant." Or you see it sometimes how in school, there'd be a child who's this big, and he's picking on, beating up a child who's this big. You know, because he's so much bigger, he can make him do whatever he wants. So the teacher walks over and says to him, "You know, you shouldn't pick on children smaller than you. You understand that? Just because you're bigger than him doesn't mean you can do anything you want. Do you understand that? Do you know you like that?" So what is the example that he's teaching him? His example is going exactly the opposite of his words. "You should be gentle with him. You understand me? Okay? If you do it again, if you're not gentle again, I'm going to really let you have it. Now do you understand what I mean by gentle?" (Laughter)
So the weight of someone being teaching by example is so heavy. It is very, very, very heavy. But that weight, if we take it very seriously as service to our spiritual master, if we take it like that, then it will force us to be good boys and girls, and we will advance greatly by taking such responsibility. So two are working. One who is very attached to the fruit of his work. And actually, it's very interesting. Possibly the best preaching I've seen amongst Indian congregational members. I haven't seen much, really. But in Melbourne, Australia, there's one initiated devotee from who was born in India. He has his own computer programming company or something like that, and he works. He preaches to so many of the Indians in the city. He has a job and he's preaching. He works so hard. He has his job and then at night he goes out and preaches. And in the morning he chants his rounds and does his reading all day. He works and in the night he goes out and preaches. Many 5 days a week, 6 days a week like that. And by his following exact, and he gives his money to Krishna like that. By his devotion and his example, he's converted so many of the Indian members or the Indian people in Melbourne into devotees. By his excellent example of working without attachment, and he teaches them who are completely attached to the fruit of their work to act with devotion. He shows them by example and by his words, etc. So if you want to increase your congregation, all you need is one person like that who is teaching by example, and then it will flourish, who has good devotion. So what is the difference between someone who is working? They may be side by side, even in the same office. So what is the difference between someone who is working, who is attached, and someone who is working, who is not attached? 27, in another very, very, very famous verse, explains the consciousness of the one who is working with attachment. Prakriti kriyamanani gunai kamani savasha ahankara vamudatma kartahamitti manyate. So he is in ignorance, and although the modes of material nature, goodness, passion, ignorance, are forcing him to do so many things, yet in his ignorance, he is thinking, Kart aham, I am the one who is doing everything. Iti manyate, he is thinking. Ahankara, bewildered by illusion, false ego, vamudatma, Kart aham, I am the doer. I am the one who's doing everything. This is ignorance. He's completely under control over by so many things. Ultimately, the modes of material nature, maya, and yet he's thinking, I am the one who's doing it. By my strength, I've gotten this raise. By my great intelligence, I've done this. I've organized this. Kartaham, I am the doer. And this is illusion, thinking that we are the doer. Because we are not the doer. We are tiny, insignificant spirit souls controlled by our karma, by destiny, by the modes of material nature, by time. And yet, in illusion, we are thinking, oh, it is me. In other words, we are thinking we are very big and very powerful and most important and see what I've done. And then in 1 second, that whole illusion can be finished. We think we are so strong, so powerful, so intelligent. 1 second, if our good karma runs out, no intelligence, no strength, hit by a car, paralyzed, heart attack, something, anything, or we get hit on the head, forget everything. 1 second, our great power, I am so wonderful, I can do this. Or just we're so popular, everyone loves us. just it's because of my good qualities, because I've done. And then in one second, something happens, and then everyone hates us. We're rich by our great intelligence in the stock market. One second, everything, our fortune changes, and we have no money. Everyone hates us.